The need is for long-term education. It is for investing in the rising generation. It is for finding the future, you know, Ron Pauls who are, you know, 8 years old right now, who if only we can reach them and teach them and have their parents help set them on this path, they can, you know, be a significant influence in the future to affect countless more people. Whereas, you know, had they gone a different trajectory, we would have lost that opportunity. So I see myself personally as kind of the Johnny Appleseed of the freedom movement, just going around the countryside, throwing seeds around and like, let's see what grows in the future, you know? And because these problems are so entrenched, there's so much inertia, and it is going to take a lot of people who care a lot to start to combat these ideas and kind of the entrenched opposition. And so we basically need, you know, many more allies, a much bigger kind of, you know, freedom friendly force to go fight against this corruption. And I think we're too small. And so we got to grow our ranks. And that in part is why I'm so dedicated to this Tuttle Turns project.
You're listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.
Hi, this is Ken Green, the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast. And today I have a special guest on for the show, Connor Boyack. He is the author of the Tuttle Twins children book series, which I bought this summer because my producer told me about the books. My son loves the books, although we can't get past the octopus. So Connor, I just want to introduce you to everyone and please say hi to the audience.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Now, I thought for sure when I got those books this summer, we cranked through a couple a week. But we cannot get past the octopus. And so what I really enjoy is, and you can talk a little bit about your background, Connor, but there definitely appears to be a very strong libertarian mindset. And I hate labels, but I don't know how else to describe it. But I just love how you're taking people's books, authors and philosophers, and just people I've really enjoyed reading and studying over my lifetime. And you're kiddifying it down into kids' books, I think creating incredible education for children that is definitely not discussed in most schools.
Yeah, that's a simple, concise summary. The Tuttle Twins definitely appeals to kind of the right of center, conservative, free market, libertarian type family who is seeing the world around them be lit up on fire and socialists coming out of the woodwork and people calling for bigger government and more stimulus and everything else. And so many of these families, especially this year, I mean, our popularity of these books has just surged because these families have realized the world is on fire and they want to talk to their kids about what's happening, but they lack the vocabulary to talk to, you know, a 6-year-old about socialism or an 8-year-old about economics. And so we basically facilitate conversations. Our story books in the Tuttle Twins take these complex ideas, political and economic ideas, and boil them down in fun stories, beautiful illustrations. So the kids enjoy the stories on their own. It's not like a textbook, you know, format where you're drilling in, here's a supply and demand curve, right? Like, you know, it's just through stories that they get context for what these ideas mean and how they work. And it gives them a language to communicate with their parents about these ideas and discuss, like, yeah, these big kid ideas that so often aren't even taught in schools, as you point out. And people always are asking, oh, what's the age range for the Tuttle Twins books? And kind of half jokingly, I'll say, oh, the average age range is 5 to 11 and members of Congress, because so few people understand these things. And, you know, it's critical that I think we all do. And so that's what we created the Tuttle Twins books
now,
for.
Now the series, and I'm trying to look up on your website, and I'm going to have everything in the show notes too, but I believe you go to tuttletwins.com. It has everything for the kids. And what I enjoyed is, so I bought for my son the series, because I just really want, I just want to educate the world that there's a different way to play the financial game. And so I'm an electrical engineer. Well, people listen to my show know, but you might not know, Connor. And so I'm an electrical engineer, a licensed civil engineer, and I like guest speaking at the university here in Reno once or twice a year, usually 100+ engineering students taking an engineering economics course. And I always like asking at the beginning, of the, I don't want to call it a speech. I say it's more like a dialogue. I really like engaging with everyone, but I'll ask the audience now pre-Zoom. Now with Zoom, it's people have to raise their hand via Zoom on these speeches. But it was the question was the fractional banking, Federal Reserve, mm-hmm. how money's made, how it moves, and very rarely, I think maybe 1 out of 100 are aware about fractional banking. And what's really fascinating is my son at 4.5 reading the Tuttle Twins book, which I think is the third one, right? Creature from Jekyll Island.
That's correct.
He's more educated on money than the majority of students, very sharp engineering students in an engineering economics course where less than 1% know about the Federal Reserve and fractional banking system.
Yeah. I mean, it's hilarious to see so many parents messaging us and they have the same reaction. They're like, I feel like my kid knows more than most adults. And quite frankly, a ton of the parents are getting educated as well. We get multiple emails and social media posts daily from parents who are like, you know, I've learned more from these books than I remember learning in school. Like, this makes it so understandable and not those boring economic textbooks or social studies or whatever. And so by simplifying it and by putting it in story, you know, you're able to appeal to a very wide age range to understand these core ideas. Obviously, there's complexity and nuance and so forth. But in economics and politics and just society in general, there's basic principles of human conduct and, you know, good governance and personal liberty that can be simplified, can be understood by even little kids. And what's funny is, it's as we become adults that I feel like society is always letting us put asterisks in, right? As parents, we'll tell our kids, you know, don't hurt other people and don't take their stuff. And that's like a foundational rule of human society, of a safe and peaceful and thriving society. Don't hurt other people. Don't take their stuff. But then as we become adults, those asterisks come in. Oh, well, if 51% of people vote for it, then it's okay, right? Like if Congress passes that law, then that's okay to take people's money through taxes to fund your pet project, or it's okay to hurt people with, you know, a no-knock warrant if they're doing something you don't like. Like we excuse these behaviors that are inconsistent with these basic values. And so we're trying to take away all those asterisks, take away all those exceptions and say, what are the core values that any good parent really wants to teach their kids? And that's what the Tuttle Twins tries to do through storytelling.
Yeah, the law, I have to admit, the law, I mean, I've read Frederick Bastiat. I think it's an incredible book, short book. And then I have to re-listen to it through Audible. And, but it's just the way Frederick Bastiat in many ways is just, it's pretty simple, right? And, yeah. And it's just, it's very eye-opening, but then try to get little guys going to pick up that book. But like your book, The Law, I mean, it broke it down. Although I felt a little bad letting a 4.5-year-old know that not all government is good. Mm-hmm. I felt a little weird, truly, on that piece. And but I mean, when do you educate your children? I mean, we live in downtown Reno. Our house has a street up front, and then it has an alley in the back. And he likes to run, especially when it's dark. He likes to bolt. And it's like, hey, it's a nice neighborhood, but sometimes not a nice neighborhood. And so it's like, hey, I hate that at 3 or 4, I have to let him know that, hey, not everyone's nice, buddy. Not everyone's nice. And I think in a good way, you guys convey that in The Law, in the Tuttle Twins. But I have to say, I did feel a little guilty.
Bursting that bubble. That. You know, and it is a good discussion, or, you know, something that the parents should consider. Some parents will feel like they want to kind of preserve, you know, their child's innocence and wait till later. Some parents go over sex ed with their kids when they're super young. Some parents wait till later, right? Like these are tough parenting decisions, and it's different for each child based on their maturity level and, you know, kind of awareness of some of these bigger ideas outside of their little world. So, you know, we've got some families who wait till their kids are 6 or 7 before they feel like the Tuttle Twins type material is appropriate. And others start at 3 and just read along and show the kids the pictures and start young. So it's, you know, we don't have like a set age range. Every kid is different. You're right to be sensitive to that. Like for different kids, that's going to be a different, you know, timing of when to talk about some of these bigger ideas, because we got to do it on the right timing on, you know, that works best for the kid.
I tell them that not most people are good. Some people are not good, you know, and I broke it down that way. But then you get to the miraculous pencil. He loved it. You know, and it's just really fun. And as an adult, I mean, I've been the finance side for a long time now, and it's just fun breaking down how much work goes into making a pencil, how important it is for money to flow and to have these free economies, and how we're so, I don't know if dependent's the right word, you probably say it better, or interdependent on each other. And it's just fun. And also breaks down, hey, why central planning just doesn't work. It's too complicated. Just let the free markets work. And then, but I thought for sure when we started reading these books this summer that by the time I had you on my show, Connor, we'd have the whole series done. But we can't get past Creature from Jekyll Island. We can't get past that octopus. And it's been a lot of fun. But he just he goes to his mom, you know, goes to my wife, and so why is the octopus eating everyone's money? And so I can only imagine when he goes into preschool when that discussion comes up. But then we had to watch for like weeks on YouTube. He wanted to learn everything he could about octopus. So, yeah. So it's been great. But what I really enjoyed were the last time we reread it, I think it was last week before Christmas. And I keep trying to get him to the next ones, but he just his emphasis keeps wanting to see the octopus. I really liked how you guys near the end. It was a great way for, I use your guys' example, which my son understood immediately, of how when you artificially increase the money supply and that money starts flowing, how fast it can have an impact on assets. And so when you're showing near the end where it's crossing out the dollar symbols, so what was once $2 is now $4 because someone else has all this extra free money, and how it has this avalanche effect, snowball effect. He was angry that how come that ticket was $2? And I'm not saying it perfectly from the book. And now it's $4. And so that's not right at 4.5 years old. And so maybe people aren't familiar with The Creature from Jekyll Island. I read that book when I was 22 and I was 130 or so pages into it. And I was so angry. I put it down. I was like, I can't read this book. I'd rather just bury my head in the sand. And then after a few months later, I was like, you know, I'm going to be a big boy, picked it right back up, started over from the beginning, read it from cover to cover. And I was like, well, at least it's good to be cognizant and understand of what's around us. And so we know how to move and pivot in the best interest for our families and just understand how the machine works. But anyway, for people listening, it's not familiar with that book. You want to explain a little bit on The Creature from Jekyll Island? And you just visited it too, which is fascinating.
It's such an interesting topic because our lives are every day affected by this quote unquote creature. And yet so many people are unaware it even exists. The Creature from Jekyll Island is the title of a book written by a gentleman named G. Edward Griffin about the Federal Reserve. This is the central bank, the kind of the bank of banks. And it's this quasi-private, quasi-government bank that controls the interest rate and thus the price of money and effectively the entire economy in a way based on the decisions of these small handful of people. And Jekyll Island is the location in Georgia where some bankers and politicians met in secret in 1910 to come together and come up with the idea, the law, the legislation that Congress soon after passed, which created the Federal Reserve. So it's only about a century old. And it was designed to try and fix what its proponents consider this cycle of booms and busts and a chaotic economy, and we need more control and to smooth things out. When in reality, since the Federal Reserve, the creature from Jekyll Island, has been created, it has been economic chaos. Not only have there still been booms and busts, but because the kind of power of printing money, quote unquote, because now it's digital and not actual printing of money, although it's that as well, since it was handed to this kind of cabal of bankers and politicians, the value of the dollar has been destroyed about 97%. And that's completely tragic because it is a hidden tax. It is theft through deception, right? Think of literally what just happened in Congress. They passed this $1.5 trillion, quote unquote, COVID relief bill, packed full of pork, you know, billions of dollars going to different countries and pet projects and all this stuff. The Congress does not have that money. The federal government is bankrupt. We are in massive, massive trillions of dollars of debt. And so what is happening instead is that that debt is being monetized. The Federal Reserve, to put it very simply, is, quote unquote, printing money out of thin air. And as they do that, as they increase the money supply, it is devaluing the purchase value, the amount, the it's devaluing the purchasing power, is what I mean to say, of all of the existing dollars in circulation. And so that's what we're trying to illustrate in our version, the Tuttle Twins and the creature from Jekyll Island. There's this scary monster and it has the ability to change prices and make prices go up. And they're wondering, well, why for grandpa, why did movie tickets used to cost very little, whereas today, you know, movie tickets cost a lot. Prices are going up. Why? What is this sinister creature changing prices? And so few people today understand even what the Federal Reserve, you know, number one, that it even exists, let alone what it does. And so our book, and certainly G. Edward Griffin's book, is an attempt to say, hey guys, here's kind of the real raw source of a lot of the problems that we have today. Let's talk about it.
As a Christmas gift, my wife bought me, I can't remember where she got it from, but I apparently that octopus is based off another octopus because I got an adult version from the creature Jekyll Island. So I got to find out, maybe I'll get in my show notes, but it was pretty neat. But so I have an adult version of the octopus. So it was pretty neat. And then just stealing money and the tentacles, institution. And it is our largest form of hidden taxation, isn't it? I mean, I can't think of anything. And I hate talking about the Federal Reserve, but it's just coming up over and over and over again. And out of curiosity, I know we're talking about the kids' books. I think it's great getting these. I just think if we all are educated from a grassroots level and it's simplified and more people understand, the more and more demand there would be to make it right. I mean, is that the intention? I mean, is there a solution on all of it?
You know, I mean, for me, this is kind of a long-term effort with the Tuttle Twins. I don't know that we have many good short-term solutions. There's such ignorance. There's such apathy. You know, people are distracted with all these, you know, pressing issues, and rightly so. But I think those in power know that distractions allow them to get away with things they want. Crises allow them to get away with what they want. When we're scared, when we're preoccupied, you know, it's easy to rush through a $1.5 trillion bill that is, you know, the second longest bill Congress has ever passed and passed full of junk that never would have passed on its own. And so to me, the need is for long-term education. It is for investing in the rising generation. It is for finding the future, you know, Ron Pauls, who are, you know, 8 years old right now, who if only we can reach them and teach them and have their parents help set them on this path, they can, you know, be a significant influence in the future to affect countless more people. Whereas, you know, had they gone a different trajectory, we would have lost that opportunity. So I see myself personally as kind of the Johnny Appleseed of the freedom movement, just going around the countryside, throwing seeds around and like, let's see what grows in the future, you know? And because these problems are so entrenched, there's so much inertia, and it is going to take a lot of people who care a lot to start to combat these ideas and kind of the entrenched opposition. And so we basically need, you know, many more allies, a much bigger kind of, you know, freedom friendly force to go fight against this corruption. And I think we're too small. And so we got to grow our ranks. And that in part is why I'm so dedicated to this Tuttle Twins project.
Well, what I like when I work with a lot of families is something I really enjoy on the finance side and in small businesses. And I like I'm trying to think like age groups, but I really like helping educate as soon as possible on money and in undoing a lot of the fallacies that our financial industry pushes, and like really simple concepts like, hey, whatever the banking and financial industry is teaching you to do with your money, let's watch what they're doing and let's do the opposite and do what they're actually doing. And what I find is once people have, I think majority of us in this country, in the world, when we're given a certain set of facts, we make, most of us are going to make the same decision, but then we add more facts to it and more facts to it and more facts to it. If we're given like three things to make a decision on, we might go in one direction, but then we're added 20 other things to think about. Mm-hmm. Then that changes, you know, the context of it, if that makes sense. And it's like, once you get more facts and more facts, like, oh, okay, well, no one taught me that. That now that I understand the whole truth, all these pieces, we're going to make a different decision. And so I think that the more and more voters, more and more people in this country get educated, and I think the more the children get educated and the parents get educated when they're teaching their kids, it could have a huge, maybe it's too optimistic, but I mean, if that's your intention, where else can you start? And
what you're pinpointing is important, though, because a lot of parents would agree with you but feel completely inadequate to do the job. I mean, I talk to these parents daily. They want their kids to understand these ideas. They want to have conversations about what's happening, but they struggle not only to know how to convey these ideas in a simple way so their kids are interested, right, and can understand them, but also the parents themselves, by and large, feel ignorant. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean that in a basic factual way, right? They are unaware of knowledge. They lack knowledge. They feel that they can't teach their kids what they don't themselves fully understand. And so what we see time and again with the Tuttle twins is that parents are like, okay, you're aligned with my principles, so I'm comfortable getting these books for my kids. And typically it's like, I've heard about it from 15 friends and they're all raving about it. So finally they pull the trigger. And what happens is usually mom, but also the dad, certainly sitting down with their kids, are learning together. And it's not mom saying, here's how the world works. And it's not dad saying, you're going to learn from me, the authority figure, right? It's parents and kids authentically learning together, discussing these ideas. What do we think? What do we agree with? Let's go, like, you know, looking up octopi on, right? YouTube, right? And sending you off on these trajectories to go learn other things. And you know, let's go learn Jekyll Island. Let's go travel there if we live close by. And so, you know, what parents are really appreciating is that they themselves are learning, you know, at a basic level, simple level, but along with their kids, and they're having these conversations that they would never dream to have had with their kids. They go to the grocery store and the, you know, 9-year-old might be like, oh, now I get why there's 13 kinds of potato chips, right? Spontaneous order. We read about that in the book. And these, you know, they'll hear something on the radio and these things start clicking where these kids are understanding complex ideas that most adults don't even understand. And it's empowering them. They're going to be, you know, better individuals and more productive and more entrepreneurial and better critical thinkers. Like, these are the things that parents want for their kids. And so these are the things that the Tuttle Twins offers.
There's a big difference between ignorance and stupidity, mm-hmm. right? I mean, every day I wake up, I feel like I know nothing. And so I'm craving more and more knowledge. And what I love watching my son is he craves more and more knowledge. Like he always asks why? And so what I enjoy about going through the books and the illustrations are fun is it gets him to engage and think and like, yeah, and ask why. And hopefully it creates a strong foundation. It's just getting him to think and getting to see things in a different way. And it removes the ignorance. Now that the stupidity part is now that we get these new set of facts and we still make the same decisions. And we don't make changes in a local level, maybe a state level and a federal level to start demanding different outcomes and different solutions from, I don't like using the word leaders because I don't think that's accurate. I would just say from our politicians. I mean, I'm craving true leaders that could be our politicians, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I stay away from the political element for the most part on my podcast because I just want to educate about money and help families and different and create different ideas and concepts. But I did have recently, it was about a year ago, I think he's a brilliant mind. I don't know if you ever met him, Yuri Maltsev.
Who, mm-hmm. I'm familiar with
him. Yeah, Yuri's great. I mean, I've met him through a good friend that worked for Ron Paul years ago when Ron Paul was on the ticket for the GOP. And a very consistent message. And so I would say I definitely enjoy Ron Paul's thinking and the way he communicates. And so I guess that's as political as I'm going to sound. And because I just don't, you know, it's like don't talk about politics, don't talk about religion, and the new religion, don't talk about COVID, because it's all the kiss of death. And but I just like, gosh, we got to educate people, and I like teaching with extremes, and I like how you, with the law, it's you're teaching through extremes. Well, if it's not right at this level,
right,
then how is it right in any different way? And so it's just fun, and I do like watching the conversations, and I do like it'll be interesting to see the more and more educated the children get reading these books, the type of conversations that will occur, especially at the public institutions at the K through 12.
And because, that's where we need the most help too, is because parents are realizing, I think, two things. There's sins of omission and sins of commission. And what I mean by that is the sin of omission is that the schools are omitting this information. They're not teaching about free market principles. They're not teaching about limited government. They're not teaching about the dangers of socialism, right? They're omitting crucial information about the way the world works.
Why
about,
is that?
Well, but let me finish a second, then we can unpack it. So there's the sin of omission. They're omitting the information. But then there's also the sins of commission, right? They are committing logical fallacies. They are committing indoctrination. There are activists in K through 12, many of them, and some of them are brazenly public about their intentions. We've cataloged a number of, you know, tweets and Facebook posts from teachers who are kind of ardent in using their platform, right? And that's an activist term, and using their platform to push a message and not simply teach neutral information and develop critical thinking, but to indoctrinate. And so if parents are out there sending their kids to these schools, you know, and not only are the schools not teaching the values that parents believe in, but teaching the opposite in many cases, it really, I think that's why we've seen an influx in interest in the Tuttle Twins this year, is because many more parents with, you know, remote learning, and they're watching the Zoom calls and they're seeing all these issues. They're now more keenly aware that there are issues in the public school systems, and the parents, even if they're going to send their kids there for whatever reason they need to, they need to supplement at home. They need to give their kids a shield and body armor before they send them back into the intellectual trenches.
Well, I think through your message, I mean, you've talked not on the show, but I've seen some of your writings. I mean, you were recently, or your company, I think, ruffled some feathers in the last 6 months, which I found fascinating. I went to that article and it's like, what did this reporter, if I remember right, go out of his or her way to target what I think are fun books that show a different way to see things and learn about free enterprise and sound financial principles. I was really amazed. And I was really amazed by your response to it too, because I don't like that kind of criticism. I don't like that kind of exposure. And you guys embraced it. And why was that so important to them? I mean, my gosh, all the reporting we've gotten this year from, it seems like, all the major media out there is just like, it to me just seems like one big propaganda arm and a lot of misdirection. And I talked about this summer after I saw the empirical data on COVID. I take this, it's obviously a pandemic. It's real. It's highly contagious. But when I saw the data, and engineers love data, I was like, my gosh, man, I mean, I was excited. I was like, they're going to open up the world again. And boy, did they go way different direction. I was like, okay, well, I'm not paying attention to the news anymore, because what's the point for a while? It's like, I can't do anything about it. It's just so misleading. It's like, I crave reporters and real information out there that they should be all over our politician, what they're doing with these bailouts. They should be all over it with the taxes. They should be all over, I mean, like real issues, not just this junk that gets thrown out every day. That's meant to, I guess, attract the lizard brains in us. I mean, it's crazy. And but I was fascinated that a reporter really took their time, I thought, to go after you guys, and I just didn't get it. Seemed like a lot of anger there, and I just don't understand the drive. And I don't know if you want to speak to that a little bit, or if it's helpful or not helpful, and how do you deal with it?
This was a magazine called Current Affairs, and they're a pro-socialist magazine, and they dedicated a lengthy article to attacking our children's books and, you know, the ideas of liberty more generally. And I read this thing first. You know, I got the Google alert for it. And so I'm like, who are these people? And I start reading this thing and I start busting up laughing. I laughed my way through that whole article, and people find this so weird. I'm asked, like, every time I share that, people are like, I'd be ticked off. They're attacking your baby, you know, like, how in the world?
It is your baby.
Right. Yeah. And so what I try and explain is, you know, over the years, I've gotten so good at marketing. I've learned a thing or two here and there where I've recognized now that the greatest gift I can get is having someone attack us. Because what we were able to do, you know, the idea is called monetize your haters. And so we created a coupon. So the name of this magazine, Current Affairs, we created a coupon code called Current Affairs. And we offered 50% off of our books. And we blasted 250,000 people on our email list and said, check out what just happened. Go read this article for yourself. You know, see what you think. And when you're ready to show those people who's boss, you know, use this coupon code. And we sold, I think, like over 10,000 books just by using that coupon code and using, because so many people got kind of, you know, agitated by that. And it kind of moved them off of the, you know, the fence. And many of them took action. Oh yeah, no, I'm gonna get some books for my, donate to my local library, right? Or donate to the school, or I'm gonna give them to the kids down the street or whatever. It motivated people to action. Why? Because it's like on a battlefield, right? It's, I'm planting my flag in the ground. I'm saying, who's with me, right? And who's against that enemy over there? And of course, all these people who are on my side are going to then rally to the flag. And I, you know, kind of rally around, you know, that foundation that I planted. And so it's that way with that magazine. I realized that the enemy was more clearly defining itself in the eyes of our readers. And so by saying, hey guys, the enemy has planted his flag, they stand for socialism, they stand for, you know, raising your taxes and growing the government and, you know, indoctrinating kids in schools and whatnot. So I'm going to plant my flag over here for freedom and traditional American values and property rights and whatnot. And so that motivated a lot of people to say, oh, that, no, I agree with you. I need to get those books. And so I laughed when I read it, because I knew that it was a great marketing gift. Like if I didn't have that opportunity to kind of market and turn the tables, I might feel a little sting, right? I might feel like, oh, that hurt, or that guy's mean, or whatever. But really, I just only saw it as an opportunity to sell even more books to more families, to help more kids learn these ideas by pointing out what a ludicrous article that was. And it worked, and I still laugh about it.
Oh, I'm a marketing idiot, so I think that's wonderful that you're able to pivot and just introduce what you guys do to even more families. I guess, yeah, and also brave. And you're involved, I assume, from a little bit I've studied about you. I mean, it seems like you, in addition, what else do you do in addition to your books?
Oh, so the books kind of are a side project born out of my full-time thing. I run a think tank called Libertas Institute, and we, you know, change laws in favor of freedom, basically limited government and so forth. And so for close to a decade, my role has been leading a team of people to get laws changed and teach people these ideas. And then the book, the Tuttle Twins book project, kind of grew out of that as a little side project, which has grown substantially. But yeah, my full-time bread and butter is, you know, trying to work with elected officials to change the law. So perhaps for that reason, I have a bit of a thick skin, and, you know, I'm used to kind of dealing with people who disagree with me, and, you know, and just dealing with that.
Yeah. I mean, is that acquired skill? I mean, and thanks for coming on the show. I mean, I'll wrap it up in a little bit, but when it comes to what you do, so how do I pronounce it? Libertas Institute?
Yeah.
Libertas. Yeah. How do you, so what's that like? I don't know if it gets you in trouble or how you can explain it. That to me, I would think would feel like pushing a big boulder up a hill and it rolls back down on you. You push the big boulder back up the hill, it rolls back down on you. But what have you seen when you're working? I mean, you're working with local, state? What kind of politicians? Like, how does that work? And how do you get these? I don't want to know if I use the word professionals, but how do you get these? They're politicians. They're professional.
That's a good question. We don't work at the federal level. Congress is just a disaster. I mean, it is now Mordor. We need to find Frodo and just throw the ring into Mount Doom. it is a disaster. So we work at a state level, primarily in the state where we're headquartered, which is Utah. And this year we've begun to expand to other states as well. So we primarily work with state legislators passing state laws where you can get a lot done. And things are far more sane than they are at a federal level. And as part of that, the question kind of answers itself in that regard. If you were lobbying at the federal level, it's just a disaster and corruption and intrigue and just every bad name that you can call it. But at a state level, it is so different in most states. It is about relationships, right? I'm not fighting people and calling them names and calling them out on social media and red versus blue, left versus right. It's about conversation and relationships and meeting people where they are and talking to people about why they believe what they do and connecting with them on common ground and building from there and persuading them in your direction with a little suggestion and a nudge here and there. And it is so much more productive. And, that's not to say there aren't problems and challenges. There certainly are, but it is a night and day difference than what you typically imagine or see at the federal level. I would encourage most, in fact, one helpful website for any of your listeners is spn.org. That stands for State Policy Network. And what that allows you to do on their little map is find the groups in your area that are working on these issues at a state or sometimes even local level where you can reach out to them. What, events are they doing or what, have they written? What articles can you share? What are they working on that you can support in your backyard where it's much easier to get, progress made than it is at the federal level?
Yeah, I think, again, going through the kids' books and what you're doing, I hate the fact that I can't pronounce this right. It's Libertas.
Yep.
Libertas Institute. I just think the more and more people understand, the more and more we're educated and the less ignorant we are as a society of how things work. I think majority of us in this country want the same thing. It's just, we don't have all the facts. We don't have all the context. And I think the majority of people in this country want to do good. Majority. But we just need the education and the next steps where we can make a fundamental difference over time. And I think it's great that the education being provided to the kids and the parents reading to the kids, I just think it's fun. I think it's phenomenal.
And, well, thank you. We're definitely having fun and feel like we're called on a mission. I see the results from families reading these books and them sharing their, stories with me and the conversations they're having with their kids. And, from my vantage point, it's just so extremely motivating to continue and do all I can through marketing to reach even more families, because I know that there's so many other families that if only I were to reach them, they would be benefited. And so I appreciate being able to come on here and reach a few more who can go to TuttleTwins.com and check out what we're up to.
All right. Well, thank you, Connor. Thanks for coming on. Thank you for everyone who listens to the show. Everyone, please go to, if you want to learn more about the books, please go to TuttleTwins.com. And also thank you for sharing with SPN.org. Because I know that's going to go on my show notes. And then also, do you have a URL or website for the Libertas Institute?
Yeah, that's Libertas and then Utah, UTAH.org. So LibertasUtah.org.
All right. Thank you. I guess that's it. Thanks for coming on the show. I'm glad we were able to put this together. I know we had a few snags in the past, and I'm glad it came to fruition. And thank you for what you're doing. It sounds like you're having a lot of fun doing it for the most part.
Most days are fun. And anyways, I'm glad we could also connect and thanks again.
All right. Thank you. Take care. And thank you everyone for listening to the show.
Thank you for listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.